Over the last several weeks, I've been talking about flashcards. Flashcards everywhere. Blueprint MCAT was testing out Quizlet to see if students would use the amazing flashcards that they created. They put about 200 flashcards on Quizlet, and behind the scenes, they've been working hard at creating over 1,500 flashcards, now available at mcatflashcards.com. The amazing platform that they have now created will allow students to study what you need to learn for the MCAT using proven spaced repetition strategies built into their platform, again, at mcatflashcards.com. This is no longer on Quizlet. All of the amazing tools are for free over at mcatflashcards.com. Go check them out. These are flashcards created by the industry experts, Blueprint MCAT experts, creating these flashcards to help you learn what you need to learn. These are not sketchy flashcard packs that you're downloading from the dark internet. These are flashcards created by the best MCAT company out there to help you maximize your MCAT score for free. Again, that's mcatflashcards.com. The MCAT Podcast, session number 220. A collaboration between the medical school headquarters and Next Step Test Prep, the MCAT Podcast is here to make sure you have the information you need to succeed on your MCAT test day. We all know that the MCAT is one of the biggest hurdles you'll face as a pre-med, and we're here to give you the motivation and information that you need to know to help get you the score you deserve so you can one day call yourself a physician. And welcome to the MCAT Podcast. My name is Dr. Ryan Gray, your host here every week. As always, I'm joined by Blueprint MCAT and an amazing member of their live online instructor corps. This week, we're continuing our breakdown of full-length one from Blueprint, which you get for free at blueprintprep.com/MCAT. We are covering Biobiochem Passage 8. Alex, back for some more MCAT podcasts. Last week, we got to hear all about your story and just how smart you are and listen to your lovely accent. This week, we get to continue our breakdown of full-length one from Blueprint MCAT, which everyone gets for free by signing up for an account over at blueprintprep.com. What do we have in store today? Oh, before we do that, one of the things, I love having new live online instructors on because I can pick your brain about kind of we talked last week about strategy and how students can approach the MCAT, but sitting in the MCAT test center or taking a full length, between passages, do you have a little strategy? I think Madeline last week, or it was Joya a couple weeks ago, was talking about like, I take 3 deep breaths and then I go into the next passage. What do you do in between passages?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm quite a big proponent of, I think there's a very particular kind of like MCAT information processing fatigue that happens when you're just feeding all of these passages into your mind, like right one after the other. And you can end up with a situation where it's like, oh God, like did this nugget of information come from this passage? Was it from the previous passage? Was it from the previous section? So I was a big proponent of between every passage, kind of sitting back in the chair and letting your eyes just unfocus to like a distant corner of the room and just taking 5 seconds to just mentally disengage from whatever you've just read, you know, clear the memory, clear the RAM, clear the memory buffer, and then engage again with the next passage. I found that kind of immensely helpful to just kind of, like, you know, we need to clear the decks. We need to get all of the, you know, all everything off scratch memory. And, you know, this is a new passage and none of the other passages exist.
Yeah. And stop feeling bad about yourself because you knew you messed up that last question, because that's just going to ruin you for the next one.
Yeah. So you know what? Previous section, previous path, you know, the previous, particularly the previous section, yeah. It's submitted. Nothing you can do about it. Like, you know, from my subjective perspective, it has like dropped off the edge of my universe.
Yes. You no longer have object permanence. The skill that you learned as a toddler has gone away.
Yeah. Like we are, you put the rubber ducky in a box and it vanished into the void.
Yeah. Awesome. I love it. All right. Let's go ahead and jump in. We are continuing our breakdown of Full Length One from Blueprint MCAT with passage 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'll start reading. Beta oxidation is a process that converts fatty acids into acetyl-CoA groups that can enter the Krebs cycle. This process occurs in the mitochondria. In humans, the normal fatty acids we eat are too big to passively pass through the inner mitochondrial membrane. An acyl-CoA molecule must first be transformed into an acyl-carnitine molecule in order to enter the mitochondrial matrix via a translocase protein. That conversion is catalyzed by a carnitine palmitoyl transferase 1, whose mechanism is thought to involve a histidine residue that activates the hydroxyl group on carnitine. Once inside the mitochondrion, the acyl-carnitine is converted back into an acyl-CoA molecule. My goodness, what do we think about that?
Those are lots of big words, and you pronounce them very wonderfully.
I always have to mentally concentrate because some of those words are pronounced differently in the UK. In the UK, we would say acetyl-CoA, not acetyl.
Mm. Yeah, but process, but, you're still sticking with process, huh?
Yeah, I'll have none of that. I alter the minimum number of pronunciations that are required to make myself understandable.
Nice. All right. I love process.
So if we take a step back, I always like to ask myself, hey, what is this passage? What is this paragraph actually saying? You know, like what is it? What is it describing? You know, what is the purpose of it here? And for me, like, you know, in terms of the things that I'd be tempted to highlight, it's like, oh, you know, right there in the first sentence, we've got beta oxidation. It converts fatty acids into acetyl-CoA. They can enter the Krebs cycle. This occurs in the mitochondria. And then that this conversion is catalyzed by carnitine palmitoyl transferase 1, which involves a histidine residue. As far as I'm concerned, these are the key nuggets. This is like really classic on the science section. They give you loads of background. This is how this process works. This is where it happens. And very often, there are actually relatively few nuggets of information that you need to pull out here for later.
Yeah. I think it's such an important skill of what is important, what is not important. And kind of going back to what we were saying last week with students, when they have this kind of discussion around like, I'm not good at that, or how did you pick out those important things, right? Looking at what you do, right? Looking at what you do, going, I didn't know those were the important words. Like, you're not expected to yet, right? Yeah, it's a skill that you're working on every passage, every paragraph, getting better and better and better at reading comprehension and picking out the important things.
Yeah, absolutely. And when people are reviewing any sorts of these passages, I often recommend that they read a paragraph themselves, try and interpret what it means, and then compare their notes to the key terms and the outline that Blueprint gives you to just say like, oh, you know, how does their interpretation line up with my interpretation? And that kind of over time, you can get better at kind of correlating one with the other.
Yeah. So important.
So in terms of key takeaways from this passage, you know, it's like, it's really not very much at all. It's like, oh, there's this process called beta oxidation. It like converts fatty acids into acetyl-CoA because fatty acids themselves are too big to go into the mitochondria. You know, they can't squeeze through that membrane. And in order to do that, acyl-CoA must first be transformed into this new molecule, acyl-carnitine. And then right below, we have figure 1, which is the structure of carnitine. This is presumably what gets modified. This is the vehicle by which those acyl groups are shuttled into the mitochondria.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Have a brief look at the structure of it. It's like, yeah, it's a molecule. It's, you know, it's got some atoms in it. Not going to, you know, we don't need to analyze it really any more than that unless we get a specific question about it.
Okay.
And then below in figure two, we have a structure of palmitic acid, which is kind of a generic fatty acid. You know, we're familiar with what they look like. You've got that carboxylic acid group and then just a big long chain of carbons.
Yeah. Got it.
Moving on, we get acyl-carnitine translocase deficiency is an autosomal recessive disorder characterized by malfunction of the translocase, whose normal function is to exchange acyl-carnitine from outside the mitochondrion for carnitine inside the mitochondrion. In the metabolism of a molecule of palmitic acid, once converted to palmitic acyl-CoA and having entered the mitochondrial matrix, four steps will occur and be repeated until the entire molecule is converted into 8 acetyl-CoA molecules. The first three steps are outlined in figure 3. Oof, more big words. It keeps on going.
Yes, and lots of diagrams here.
Yeah. What I really like about these kind of pair of paragraphs is they start, once you've done enough of them, these kind of sciences, they really start to develop their own kind of, their own rhythm, where it's like, here's a bunch of background, and now here's where we start diving into the meat of the thing that we want you to analyze, which in this case is this acyl-carnitine translocase deficiency, which is like, okay, we've told you how the process works normally, but now we're going to tell you, like, okay, this is, in some people in this recessive disorder, this process breaks. And that's really common on the MCAT, because then they very often kind of parlay that into saying, like, and what would you expect to happen in these patients who have this particular deficiency based off what we've told you about it and based on your outside knowledge of how energy metabolism works? What predictions can we start making about how this might affect someone's broader physiology? So in this case, the translocase breaks. That means it can't exchange those acyl carnitines from outside for the carnitines inside. And then we have some information about the metabolism of a molecule of palmitic acid. And then we get a figure three, which kind of details those steps in chemical detail. These are the steps that are happening.
So for me, as I see these two paragraphs, this is a lot of information. And I don't know if any of it is really important, right? It seems obvious that there's this deficiency and a malfunction. Do I need to know, like, this is the exact malfunction is this exchange from inside to outside and it converts this into 8 acetyl-CoA molecules, or is that just something that I can refer back to?
I would highlight the important terms. Yeah, because it might be important, but this is the MCAT. It might not be important. This might be given and then never referenced in a question, in which case it's not important. So, as ever with these things, I try and say to students, like, pluck out the bones of the process, which in this case is the translocase malfunctions and it can't exchange these carnitine molecules. And then this is how, this paragraph here is, this is how palmitic acid is metabolized. The whole thing's converted to 8 acetyl-CoA molecules. I wouldn't dig in any more than that until we know that we get perhaps a more, until maybe a question asks us to interrogate this process in more detail. Remember, every second you spend on the MCAT analyzing a process that's not directly queried is a second wasted.
All right.
This isn't a scientific paper that we can pore over at our leisure.
Unfortunately.
Yes.
Stupid time limits.
Yeah. And then figure three, first three steps of the beta oxidation of palmitic acid. This should be a process that students are hopefully familiar with, because the process of beta oxidation is included in the MCAT content categories. So hopefully this should be reasonably familiar. But, if it isn't, note that that's what the figure says and move on.
Okay.
Step one produces an FADH2 and step three produces an NADH and H+. Table 3 shows how many ATP are produced per NADH, FADH2, and per acetyl-CoA. I really like this paragraph because it's providing a link now between this figure above and the table below.
Yeah.
We have a list of steps on how fatty acids are metabolized. And then below, we have a table that gives us more data. How much ATP do we get per process? And presumably the questions will ask us to, you know, link these in some interesting and synthetic way.
All righty. And then we jump in. I'll go ahead and start with this first question because I'll probably get it wrong. question 40. If we start with the molecule below instead of palmitic acid, which step will be interrupted and which enzyme will be used to correct the issue? And so figure two, we have palmitic acid, and I have them kind of lined up side by side here. So mm-hmm. you can see if you're watching on video, if you're listening to this in a podcast form, go watch the video and you can see. But it's almost all the same, except there's one double bond kind of in the middle.
What do you think?
Yeah, and so... if we start, which step will be interrupted? I have no idea.
So as ever with these questions, I really like, because this is like a classic 2x2 question where we have like two nuggets of information in each answer choice. We have, we can see here, A says step one, phosphatase. B says step one, isomerase. C says step two, reductase. And D says step two, kinase. Immediately, this means the only options for which step it could even be is one or two.
Yep.
So you know what? Step three, for now, we can ignore it. Because it can't possibly be right.
Yeah.
So I always like to start with like, all right, let's evaluate. Like the first chunk of the question, is it step one or is it step two? And if we look at these steps, like, I don't know, which molecule does the one given to us in question 40, like which molecule does it resemble the most? I always think that's a really great place to start. Which one does it look the most like?
Well, step two in our figures has a double bond in there, similar to this one, just in a different spot.
Yeah, I agree. It does. It's like, oh, it's almost the same molecule. It's just in a different spot. So I would be inclined, as we know from enzymatic processes, that enzymes are very specific to the molecule that they bind to. And if it's not shaped in the right way, then it'll probably interrupt the process. If I had to guess, that's probably the concept that this question's trying to interrogate. So if step one, you know, takes this clean, beautiful, you know, double bond free carbon chain and converts it into one with a double bond in it, I would wager that if we had a fatty acid molecule that already had a double bond, it would interfere with step one, because that enzyme that does that conversion, presumably is looking for like a clean single bond only carbon chain, and we're not giving it to it. We're giving it a carbon chain that already has a big fat double bond right in the middle.
Yeah.
So I'd be tempted to say step one is the right answer there, the process that it interrupts. In which case, we can probably tentatively eliminate C and D.
Yeah. And now we have 50% chance of getting the right answer versus 20.
Yeah. And if you're not sure from now, then you could, you know, if you say you have 5 seconds left, even if you guess now, you've doubled your odds of getting the question right.
Yeah. Okay.
So now, you know, which enzyme will be used to correct the issue? So now we're effectively just asking, what enzyme are we looking for to convert this molecule with a double bond in the middle to that second molecule on the left that has a double bond kind of much closer to the right? And what classes of enzymes do we normally look for that just rearrange bonds?
I want to say isomerases.
Yeah, yeah, which means B is the right answer.
Okay.
Phosphatases classically remove phosphates from molecules. Kinases add phosphate groups and phosphatases remove them. In this case, A is not the right answer because there's no phosphate that's being added or removed.
Yeah.
You know, we're just looking for an isomerase. We're looking for an enzyme that'll come along and pluck that double bond off the middle and stick it closer to the end.
All right. Piece of cake, right? This is easy stuff. All right. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. I like this one because that's a question that seems really intimidating. But then once you like dive into like what's it actually asking and like go back to and go to its like most elemental steps, it's not nearly as scary.
Yeah. All right. 41, go ahead.
Yeah. Injection of insulin into the bloodstream is least likely to result in which of the following? So we have A, increased glycogen synthesis, B, decreased lipid synthesis, C, increased esterification of fatty acids, and D, decreased gluconeogenesis. What do we need? What are we thinking here?
Oh, so first of all, I read this, and as a student, I'm so focused on the passage, and I go, wait, insulin, blood, like, we didn't talk about this at all. why is this a question in this passage? And obviously it's a pseudo discrete here. And I wonder how it is potentially related other than I have no idea. Anyway,
yeah.
then it's a metabolism question. And there's a little metabolism, I guess, in the passage.
Yeah.
So
and the MCAT loves doing this. The MCAT loves doing this, which is like throwing you a pseudo discrete after they've just had you digging around in the passage and being like, wait, what?
Yeah. Thanks, MCAT. All right. So I think hopefully most students understand insulin's job, right, is to get kind of glucose into cells so we can use it. And all of that fun stuff. So what happens here? Glycogen synthesis, right? Glycogen is a storage molecule. So we're storing glucose. That happens when we get glucose into the cell. We go, hey, we got some extra here. Let's store it. So that's going to happen. So that's not the right answer because it's a least likely. We always got to make sure. We got to make sure that we understand the question.
I always highlight least if it shows up in the question stem, yes, because otherwise I've been burned so many times.
Yes, least likely. So let me just read the answers here. So increased glycogen synthesis. B is decreased lipid synthesis. C is increased esterification of fatty acids. D, decreased gluconeogenesis. So decreased lipid synthesis. Okay, so we go, oh wait, fat storage, lipid synthesis. That's making fat. We're going to decrease that. Well, if we have excess energy, right, excess sugar, excess glucose, we're probably going to store that as fat too. So that would be increased. So this is saying decreased lipid synthesis. So that doesn't necessarily make sense to me. So I'm going to hold off on that for now. I'm not super excited about that answer for some reason. All right. C is increased esterification of fatty acids. Now I see that and I go, I have no remembrance of what esterification of fatty acids means. So that one scares me because I don't know what it means. so it could be, am I breaking down fatty acids or am I making fatty acids? That potentially is maybe the definition of that. So C is crazy. I don't like that. D, decreased gluconeogenesis. So gluconeogenesis, right, is making new glucose. Do we need to make new glucose if we are injecting insulin? My assumption is no, we don't need to make new glucose. We're taking insulin so we can get it out of the bloodstream. We're not like in some sort of fasting state or I don't know. So least likely. So decreased gluconeogenesis makes sense if we're injecting glucose. We have plenty of glucose around. That's what I think. So I'm down to 50-50. Decreased lipid synthesis. So let's go back to that one. Lipid synthesis. Do I need to make fat? I'm going to go with B because I have no idea what C means.
I think that is flawless content strategy, which is narrowed it down to two and then picked the one that looked encouraging and ignored the one that you're like, oh God, like, you know, esterification, is that more? Is that less? I don't remember. Yeah, that is exactly how I would advise a student to solve the problem. which is like, yep, you know, use your content knowledge, eliminate A and D, and then look at, you know, look between B and C, and then pick the one which looks good as opposed to the one which is neutral because maybe, you know, a particular definition has slipped your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. In this case, we can eliminate C because esterification of fatty acids is actually, imagine it as the fatty acid analog to making glycogen from glucose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, esterification is formation of ester bonds. You know, you're linking a bunch of fatty acids together so that they can better be stored. You know, esterification of fatty acids is exactly what you'd expect when you inject insulin because it's right up there with lipid synthesis. You're taking a bunch of sugar in, or you know, you're taking in, you know, you're not burning fatty acids anymore. You're actually linking them up for storage. So that's exactly the process that we would expect from injection of insulin.
All right. Awesome.
Yeah, so great question. Insulin and glucagon, lipid. Super high yield.
Yes. Gotta know some of that physiology, which is like, wait a minute, physiology is not on the MCAT. Oh, yes, it is.
Where you'd least expect it, too.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right. Question 42, and I see right off the bat it's a Roman numeral one, so my anxiety goes through the roof immediately. So we gotta keep that down. In which steps in figure 3, so let me scroll here to figure 3, is the fatty acid oxidized? Roman numeral 1, step 1. Roman numeral 2, step 2. Roman numeral 3, step 3. We have 1 only, 3 only, 1 and 3 only, 1, 2, and 3 only. And so this trick that we usually get to of let's look at the answer choices and find which Roman numeral occurs the most doesn't really work here because 3 is in 3 and 1 is in 3 answer choices. And so it's like, oh, thanks a lot. So the question really comes down to, well, do we think it's step 2? I don't know if we should look at step 2 first because that's only in one answer choice.
Yeah, I like that strategy, and I'm absolutely inclined to agree with you. I always think this is a great question where people can get really tangled in the details for a long time, examining those steps, examining those flowcharts. And in fact, what separates kind of amazing strategy people, and you can get the question right in both ways by either looking at the figure in depth. But if we just scroll down a little bit, passage tells us everything we need to know.
Mm.
Step 1 produces an FADH2, and step 1 produces an NADH plus H plus.
Step 3, yeah.
Yeah. In the body, FAD plus and NAD plus exist as free molecules. They float around. So if you're ever producing an FADH2 or an NADH plus, that means they are getting reduced. You are adding hydrogens to them. Which makes sense because they are later, of course, fed into the electron transport chain. If they are getting reduced, something else is getting oxidized. And in this case, it's the fatty acid.
Hmm. Interesting. So it tells us right there. And it doesn't say anything about step 2. And so the pre-med in me, right, the neurotic pre-med in me will go, wait a minute. But it doesn't say it doesn't happen in step 2. So how do I know just by looking at the chart?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we look at the graph, if we look at step 2 here, you know, I think it's really tempting to look at this figure and say, oh, it is being oxidized. Look, you know, we take a double bond and we convert it to a hydroxide. You know, that's, you know, I'm increasing bonds to oxygen. That's oxidation, right? It must be 1, 2, and 3. And this is a kind of an interesting and finer point of chemistry, which is when you add water, what we're doing here really is you're just adding water, you know, across a double bond and mm-hmm. converting it into this OH. That means we're actually just adding an oxygen and 2 protons, which actually means there's no net redox at all. Yeah, this is a tricky one. So certainly, moving quickly, I would be tempted to pick C because, you know, in the body, if something like a fatty acid is being oxidized at step two, you would expect an evolutionary process to have optimized it such that it extracts energy out of it somehow by coupling it to one of these processes. We can eliminate step two by examining that mechanism and being like, ah, you're adding, you know, you're adding a water, you're adding H2O. That means you have that oxygen and you have those two protons. Those two protons cancel out the two electrons that are being transferred. There's no net redox. But we could have eliminated it down to C and D with that one sentence in that paragraph there.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, this is a great question.
Always got to remember things that are being reduced. Something's getting oxidized. Things that are getting oxidized. Something's getting reduced. It's like a yin and yang.
Flow of electrons makes the world go round. I always think there's a kind of poetic symmetry in the kind of that the electron flows that, you know, make our computers and phones work are actually remarkably similar to the electron flows that, you know, keep our mitochondria and cells functioning.
There's a Queen song that says that something else makes the world go round, but we won't sing that song. All right. Question 43.
Which of the following is most likely not a symptom of acyl carnitine translocase deficiency?
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is the second paragraph here.
Yeah.
So A, hyperglycemia, B, muscle weakness, C, liver damage, or D, high ammonia levels in blood. And again, most likely not a symptom of... Whew. All right. So students are going to be like, wait a minute. I don't know anything about acetyl carnitine translocase deficiency, other than that there's this malfunction of the translocase, which normally exchanges acetyl carnitine from outside the mitochondrion for carnitine inside the mitochondrion. So,
yeah.
Oh, all right. So I know it's potentially a mitochondria disease. But the question is, what else is being used here?
Yeah. I like this question a lot because it forces you to think like, okay, what's the question actually asking? And so I don't know, I always reframe these in my head whenever it says which of the following is most likely not, because again, like, I don't know, something about my brain, I don't like that wording. I always try and reframe it and be like, all right, three of these are symptoms, like click the one that isn't.
Yeah.
And that just like that framing really helps me conceptualize it better.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So if we look in the passage, like what is the question asking? Well, it's a translocase deficiency characterized by the malfunction of the translocase, whose normal function is to exchange acyl carnitine from outside for carnitine inside. How is that relevant? That's expanded upon in the first paragraph. An acyl-CoA molecule must first be transformed into an acyl-carnitine molecule in order to enter the mitochondrial matrix. It's because fatty acids that we eat are too big to passively pass through the inner membrane. If we link those two concepts together, we can infer that fatty acids are broken down into acetyl-CoA molecules. We need this translocase, this carnitine translocase system, to get those acetyl-CoAs into the mitochondria so that they can be broken down for energy, so that they can be fed into the Krebs cycle. We know that from our content review. So presumably, this deficiency interferes with the metabolism of fatty acids. Then it's time to make predictions. You know, what symptoms would we see if someone can't metabolize fatty acids?
Can't metabolize fatty acids. So it's interesting. The only one that kind of stands out as like weird is hyperglycemia. I'm like, wait, how does that have to do with increased fatty acids. Obviously, muscle weakness, you're not getting energy, all that kind of fun stuff. Lots of things will screw up the liver if things aren't working right. So that's seems like an easy one.
Always a great inference. What causes liver damage? Awful lot.
Yes. High ammonia levels. I'm like, wait a minute, what's ammonia?
Where does ammonia in the body come from?
The liver?
Ammonia in the body comes from the breakdown of nitrogen-bearing molecules, mostly proteins, which makes sense here. If we can't metabolize fatty acids, presumably we got to get energy from somewhere else. What other molecules can we metabolize for energy? Sugar and amino acids. If someone's really relying on amino acid metabolism for energy, they'll probably have a lot of byproducts of that metabolism in their blood. High ammonia levels, I think, fits here.
Yeah.
So that leads us, I think, to A, quite naturally, which is, wait a minute. Like, you know, and you already flagged it as seeming really unusual, which is like, wait a minute. Like, we can't break down fat. So why would we have high sugar in the blood? Like, if we are disproportionately now leaning on glucose as an energy source, why would there be loads of it hanging around? Presumably, there'd be almost none because, you know, every cell in your body is, you know, screaming out for energy.
Help me, help me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So A is a great, I think this question is a great example where maybe you don't want to proceed by process of elimination. So I think it's actually probably easier to get to A than it is to rule out some of the other ones, which are more subtle. Like you said, B, muscle weakness is a very natural symptom of lack of energy availability. C, liver damage. Like you said, many things mess up the liver, but particularly fat is stored in the liver. You know, fatty liver is a common, you know, symptom of, you know, like alcoholism or being really overweight. If you can't break down fatty acids, fat will accumulate in the liver and eventually cause liver damage. I think, what's it called? Fatty liver, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, I think.
Yep. NASH.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a really good question, and is one that I'd be tempted to not address with elimination because some of those answer choices are quite like, you know, you really have to follow the chain down.
Oh, all right. That was a very interesting passage and set of questions because, again, you have this passage that is a little funky and then some pseudo-discretes in there and lots of interesting knowledge that you have to draw upon.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a, you know, those were difficult ones, but I think they really do strike at the heart of the kind of, you know, the kind of synthesis that the MCAT really requires. You know, I think if you're someone who's traditionally perhaps done really well on exams by just memorizing a bunch of information, you know, particularly that last passage would have been really tough to tackle because, you know, you had to link three pieces of information from the passage together and then apply and then go to the question and think, well, from those pieces of information, what is then the natural implication six steps downstream? Yeah. Which is what you have to do every day as a doctor. I think isn't maybe a skill that everyone has had to practice before they get to the MCAT.
All right, there you have it. Hopefully another great episode for you to follow along with Full Length One from Blueprint, which again, you can get for free, as well as a half-length diagnostic and access to their amazing study tool at blueprintprep.com/MCAT. Hope you have a great week. We'll see you next time here on the MCAT podcast.
This is MedEd Media.
Don't forget to go to MCATfreeprep.com and learn how Blueprint MCAT, with their powerful analytics that take the guesswork out of the MCAT and the only fully customized study planner, can help you on your MCAT journey. Again, that's MCATfreeprep.com.